Good morning. Shavua Tov.
Good morning. Shavua Tov.
Sorry I missed, but I had a very interesting Shabbat.
Oh, I think we all did.
I was couldn't get away from the facility, as they say.
Yeah, okay.
So I
was
really
a little concerned, you know, because it's not like you to miss, so
no. I
was afraid that we were okay and would be back today, and my prayer was answered.
And I thank you for that prayer.
Okay.
I take it through the first.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll wait one more minute and we'll start.
Okay. You know, tomorrow we'll be on the road again to the doctor in Houston.
Yes.
I'll be in the garage for about 2 hours waiting for a virtual call. So they won't let anybody go up with them.
Understand.
So this one is much longer. His COVID test was negative, so that was good. Okay.
Yeah.
That's my news, and I don't have to text you.
All right. Let's begin. L'shem Yichud Kud Shabarichu Ishkin Pei Bit Hilu Urchimu Ud Hilu Ud Hilu Urchimu Le'akta L'shem Yud Hei Bavav Hei Le'yichud HaShalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah Vayihino Am Adonai Elohino Aleinu Ma'aseh Yadeinu Kananeh Aleinu Ma'aseh Yadeinu Kananehu. Today we will be studying the first Aliyah for the Parasha of Shemot, and it runs from the book of Exodus, or the book of Shemot, chapter 1, verse 1, and completes at verse 17. It's a total of 17 verses, which we know the number 17 connects to the word Tov, which is connecting to Hashem's goodness. Verse 1. Le'ele Shemot B'nei Yisrael Abayim Misraima Et Yaakov Yishuveito Ba'u Reuven Shimon Levi V'Yehuda Yisaskar Zvulun Ubinyamin Dan v'Naphtali Gad v'Asher Vayhi kol nefesh Yotze Yerech Yaakov Shivim nefesh Yosef haya Mitzrayim Vayamad Yosef v'kol echav v'kol chador ahu uvnei Yisrael haru v'yisretzu v'yirbu v'yatzmu b'meod b'od v'atimale Sotam Vayakam Melech Hadash Al Mitzrayim Asher Lo Yada Et Yosef Vayomer El Amo Hine Yam B'nei Yisrael Rav Yatsum Imenu Ava nitchak ma lo pen yirbe wechaya ki tikrena milchama wenosa.
Has joined.
Gam hu al shoneinu v'nilcham banu v'yala min ha'. Yasimu alav sare misim lama nanoto vestiblotam baiven are miskino lefaro et pitom beet ra'am says Wikasher Yanu Oto Kain Yirbe Wikain Yifrots Bayakutsu Mifne Bene Israel Wayavidu Mitzrayim Et Bene Israel Befarech Why Mararu
has joined.
Ba'avoda kasha v'chomer uvil benim u'kol avoda basadeh et kol avodatam asher avdu v'hem b'farech v'yomer melech mitzrayim Lam yaldot ha'ivrim asher sham shem ha'achat shifra v'shem ha'shenit hua v'yomer b'yaled chen et ha'ivriyot u'iten al ha'avdaim Im bein hu v'hamiten Oto v'im bat hi v'chaya V'atirena ham yaldot et ha'elohim V'lo asu ka'asher diber yaleichen Melech Mitzrayim Vatayena et hailadim. That's the completion of the 17 verses. Now let's begin our study of the English. And these are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt. With Jacob, each man and his household came. There's a question by the sages about what does the word household mean. Each man came with his households, and it relates to his family and his possessions, is what the answer is. Reuben, Shimon, Levi, and Judah. You'll notice that that order is in the order of birth. Verse 3, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin. And that order is not in the order of birth. Verse 4, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. You'll notice where the ands are in that verse. Verse 5, now all those descended from Jacob were 70 souls, and Joseph, who was in Egypt. And we... Unfortunately, I wasn't capable of reading last Friday, Thursday, maybe two. I don't quite remember because I was not well. But I am well now, thanks to all of your prayers. And but when we counted the names in the of those who descended to Egypt with Jacob last week, we discovered there's only 69 names. And the Midrash tells us that the 70th was in the womb of Yocheved. Actually, Yocheved was the soul that was in the womb, the mother of Moses. So she was the first person of the Jewish world that was born in the exile, in the Egyptian exile. Obviously, Abraham and Sarah were born in the exile. They were not in Israel. But except for that, Yocheved was the first person who was born in that exile. That is significant. Now, Joseph died, as well as all his brothers and all that generation. The commentaries point out that Joseph died before his brothers. And that is attributed to his sins, primarily the sin of not informing his father, although that was part of the plan of creation, that Joseph go down to Egypt to prepare the way for Jacob and all of the others. The children of Israel were fruitful and swarmed and increased and became very, very strong, and the land became filled with them. Now, is this referring to the land of Goshen or the land of Egypt or both?
What happened?
And this idea of swarming, everywhere else you see this phrase, fruitful and multiply. But here is fruitful and swarmed. And also, I think this is the only place in the Torah where you have the word meod twice. I could be wrong about that, but it's very, very unusual. And I doubled up the very on purpose. Because we learn in Genesis that when the Torah uses the word meod, it's concealing an aspect of the negative system. In what way is the quantity of people an indication of strength? Maybe it indicates a strong connection to Hashem. But that's really a very significant question. Verse 8. A new king arose over Egypt who did not know about Joseph. The commentaries are questioning whether it's actually a new king, a different person, or the same person who has become more concerned about the Jewish people in his land, and so therefore has forgotten about Joseph, as opposed to did not know. But you can read it both ways. He said to his people, "Behold, the people of the children of Israel are more numerous and stronger than we are." Here we see that strength does not come from numbers. But what does it mean that they are stronger? They're better business people? They're wealthier? What is the physical meaning of the word stronger? Get ready. Let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they increase and a war befall us, and they join our enemies and wage war against us and depart from the land. So what is he afraid of? Somebody comes to attack Egypt, and the Jewish people join the enemies. Or is he truly afraid that they're going to leave the land, because having them in the land means the wealth of Egypt is increased due to their merit, just like Laban's wealth was increased due to Jacob's merit. And this is true in many other places. Whenever throughout the exile, throughout the diaspora, whenever the Jews entered a country, that country's wealth and political influence increased. And whenever they were thrown out of a country, that country's wealth and political influence declines. So they appointed over them tax collectors to afflict them with their burdens. And they built store cities for Pharaoh, namely Pitom and Ramses. But as much as they would afflict them, so did they multiply, and so did they gain strength, and they were disgusted because of the children of Israel. Now, we've learned in other places that the Egyptians, or we learned last week, literally, that the Egyptians are disgusted by eating with the children of Israel. Why? I've never read a reason why they're disgusted with the children of Israel's forms of eating, but I imagine it was because they would not eat pig, that they kept milk and meat separate, the various forms of kosher. Why that would disgust them, I have no idea. So the Egyptians enslaved the children of Israel with backbreaking labor, and they embittered their lives with hard labor, with clay and with bricks and with all kinds of labor in the fields. All their work that they worked with them was with backbreaking labor. If you go to verse 13, which we read, and verse 14, the one is a general statement. They enslaved the children of Israel with backbreaking labor. But then in verse 14, their work becomes embittered. And this is the indication. In verse 13, the indication is this is the plan of creation. In verse 14, this is where the Egyptians went too far. And this is why Egypt was destroyed with the plagues, because the Egyptians went too far in how they were treating the Jews. It was one thing to enslave them and to give them hard work, another to embitter their lives with hard labor. Because any time something happens and it's part of the plan of creation, there is no negative effect to that. Of course, we are not privy to what is the plan of creation in all its details, so we're never sure. But understand, the plan of creation, there is no negative effect, even if you are doing something that's harmful to others. If it's part of the plan of creation, there's no negative effect. But if it's going too far, as most of us do, then it's part of a negative effect, cause and effect. Verse 15. Now the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one who was named Shiphrah and the second who was named Pua. Well, we're talking at this point, there's got to be 400,000 or 500,000 people. So let's say 200,000 women. Do you think two midwives is sufficient? But we're told just these two, and the sages tell us that this is Jochebed, the mother of Moses, and her daughter Miriam, who's 6 years old when Moses is born. And I'm not sure that a six-year-old has the knowledge or the skills or the ability to be a midwife. Verse 16, and he said, this is Pharaoh, when you deliver the Hebrew women and you see on the birth stool if it is a son, you shall put him to death. But if it is a daughter, she may live. The Midrash then explains that Jochebed had been separated by her from her husband. And her daughter Miriam went to her father and said, you are worse than Pharaoh. Pharaoh's only killing the boys, but you're killing both. And so her husband remarried Jochebed, which is against Torah law. It's really not against Torah law, but if she had had relations with anyone other than her husband, it goes against the Torah law. Verse 17, the midwives, however, feared God, so they did not do as the king of Egypt had spoken to them, but they enabled the boys to live. That's the end of the English translation. Does anyone have any questions? We are studying the Perek Shira. I believe the last time we studied this, which was probably Wednesday, maybe Thursday, last week, we began chapter 2 and we studied 4 verses in chapter 2, if I remember correctly. And I did remind us that in chapter 1, there were 10 verses in chapter 1 and 11 verses in chapter 2, and I explained the connection between the two sets. Being the 10 Sephirot, and when the number 11 comes up, it includes the negative system. So we are on the beginning of page 5. Kochavim Omrim Atahu Adonai Yohewahe Adanu Yo Adanu Yoa Yoahe Dawanu Heyo Levavdecha Ata Asita Ed Hashamayim Shimei Hashamayim V'kol Tziva'am Haaretz V'kol Asher Alecha Hayamim V'kol Asher Bahem V'yatah Mecha, et kulam, utva hashamayim lecha. This is Mishtachavim. This is a verse from Nehemiah. The stars are saying, you, only you, are God. You, only you, are Hashem. You made heaven, the heaven of heavens, with all their host, the earth, and everything that is in it, the seas, and everything that is in them. And you preserve them all, and the host of heaven prostrate themselves to you. Why do we have to have this information? It's actually not a good translation. If you look at the first three words that said, Ata Hu Hashem, it's not you, only you. It's you. He is Hashem. What is the difference between those two translations? The word Atah, which we say in every blessing, in the formulaic forms of the blessings, Baruch Atah Hashem, etc. Atah has the letters Aleph to Tav, which represents the Shekhinah, but it also represents all the, anything that is created has to be using the Hebrew letters to name it. And when you go from Aleph to Tav, that's all of the creation, all of the Hebrew letters. Any word that comes from the Hebrew letters is what's being created. But the last letter, He, represents the physical world, the lower He of the Hashem's name. So the word you, Atah, means all of the creation injected into the Hebrew letters. All of the creation is heaven and the heaven of heavens with all their host. The earth and everything that is in it. Doesn't say that is on it. It says everything that is in it, which leads to an understanding of the inner earth. The seas and everything that is in them. And you preserve them all. And the host of heaven prostrate themselves to you. But not the host of the earth. Man has free choice. This is what's being hinted at in this prophecy by Nehemiah. We're out of time, so while you're unmuting yourself, I will tell you my plans for today is to explain about Shovavim, because last night we started the period of Shovavim, and it's an unusual period that nobody ever speaks about. They're beginning to. Not because I speak about it, but because once something becomes revealed, it begins to spread. And those same thoughts occur to other. They do the research and they do the reading of the sages. Yogavim was explained to me in the Kabbalah Center. But it was just mentioned, not even from a teacher to students, but different students explained it. But it really wasn't discussed in public. But we will learn why when we understand what is Shobhavim. And then our 3 o'clock class will be Psalm 93. So I hope you'll join us for one or both of those classes. Does anyone have any questions? I bid you all Shalom Gadol, Shavua Tov, a good week, a week filled with peace and serenity. Shalom to all.
Okay, Shalom.
Thank you, thank you.
Shalom, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.